Either you do nothing and it continues to kill you, capture you, and seize your land, or you resist and the enemy will continue the aggression. But the message will be conveyed that the Palestinian people are still adhering to their right to resist, that the enemy is paying a price for the occupation, and that in the end, this enemy will be forced to leave your land. Therefore, when you always choose resistance and you anticipate the scale of aggression and the enemy's reaction, you are convinced that this is the path that will lead to liberation.
With all the killing, destruction in Gaza, backed by the West, especially the United States, how do you plan to rebuild your popularity and also lay foundations for a new phase?
First, we start with the fact that the United States of America does not just support Israel. The United States of America is a partner in crime, a partner in genocide. It may appear to support Israel politically, but in practice, it provides ammunition, equipment, and weapons to the Zionist entity. It also employs all technological facilities in discovering tunnels and thus serves as pillars of Zionism. It is a full partner in the crime against the Palestinian people. On the other hand, when we talk about our popularity, we are not worried about it because historically the Palestinian people have always been the ones who choose resistance, and the popularity of resistance always rises. 2 months ago, various opinion polling institutions conducted an opinion poll about the popularity of the Palestinian Authority. Hamas is popular in Gaza, which was not so before the operation. Before the war, Hamas's popularity ranged between 40 to 45%. After the operation, its popularity rose. The Palestinian people saw that the resistance movement has been fighting this army for days, an army that boasted about its invincibility. People began to feel that the chances of liberation were higher than ever before, so Hamas's popularity rose. This gives us additional responsibility. How do we deal with this popularity and what serves the interest of our people to achieve national success? There is no doubt that this is a great responsibility.
Definitely it is. Now, there are propositions suggesting that Hamas is being coerced into relinquishing its leadership role in Gaza post-war amidst American and possibly Arab support, now leading to a transition to the Palestinian Authority. Now, what is Hamas's stance on these propositions, and how do you plan to particularly thwart them?
يعني دعني أوضح أولا أن حماس لم تكن يوما متمسكة بأن تكون هي السلطة الحاكمة.
Firstly, it is clear that Hamas was never committed to being the ruling authority. We have always adhered to a specific principle that the Palestinian people are the ones who elect and who choose their leadership through free elections. The leadership must present a program to the people that hold it accountable. Our program is clear. We resist for liberation. We won the election in 2006 and served this platform. America cannot change this fact, and we do not accept its interference in our internal affairs. We have informed all Arab countries that their interference over the Palestinian people is rejected. Whoever decides the next day in Gaza or the Palestinian people alone. This is the first part. The second part, we met with all the Palestinian factions and an agreement was reached on basic issues, including the formation of a transitional Palestinian government after the war, in which all the factions are represented and have their authority to hold elections and begin the reconstruction process. Therefore, we are not concerned about the future of the leadership of the Palestinian people, as much as we are keen for the leadership to be the one that has the option of resistance and believes in the complete liberation of Palestine.
The next question is, your objective with Operation Al-Aqsa was to shed light on the plight of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, yet the occupation has added around 10,000 new prisoners. Does Hamas still prioritize shedding light on prisoners, or is it the priority now to reach a ceasefire and to get humanitarian aid into Gaza?
دعني أوضح هنا
Let me clarify here that the issue of prisoners was just part of the objectives of the operation and was not the primary objective of it. The main goal of the operation was to confront the project of the Netanyahu government, which announced that it would end the Palestinian issue within the next 4 years. He developed a program to seize Al-Quds and transfer ownership of real estate from the Palestinians to the Zionists, seizing the maximum level, building more settlements in the West Bank, and developed a program to bring in 1 million new settlers from outside of Palestine, Jews from all over the world, and decided to begin the process of rebuilding his relations in the region, with American support, to form a situation in which Israel appears to be a natural entity. The operation came to say that Palestine is still under occupation. The Palestinian people are still resistant. We want to liberate our land, and this is what happened. One of the results of the operation is that the prisoners will be transferred. One of the results of the operation is that the siege on the Palestinian people ends. But the essence of the process is to put the Palestinian issue on the right path.
Great. Now, if a ceasefire is agreed upon, what kind of a guarantee can there be that ensures the U.S. will comply with the terms, or the Israeli regime for that matter, especially if and when all the captives are released? Because we know when it comes to Israelis, they are not very good with being committed to their oaths and their commitments.
I agree with you that the Israelis do not abide by agreements and covenants. Their history of this is very bad. Therefore, the real guarantee is the resistance's ability to continue the confrontation with the occupation. The real guarantee is the ability of the Palestinian people to withstand. The real guarantee that we won in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood is that the Israelis and Americans began to realize that the resistance axis is capable of applying pressure to support the resistance in Gaza and is capable of having an effective influence on the political positions in favor of the resistance. Therefore, when you make an agreement, you bet on the power cards you hold, that they are the ones that can be a true guarantor of the agreement that was concluded. The occupation will try to evade or deceive, but we will also try, through the power cards we possess, to make it as disciplined as possible.
And Mr. Hamdan, speaking of negotiations and ceasefire talks, why did Hamas withdraw from the Cairo negotiations? Does the delay harm Palestinians more or the occupation?
The truth is that we did not withdraw from the Cairo negotiations. What happened was that after the Paris meeting, a proposal was presented to Hamas regarding a ceasefire and some details. This proposal was also presented to the occupation side. For us, we responded to the proposal. We proposed some modifications to it and developed our vision to improve the proposal. On the Israeli side, the mediators were surprised because Israel, which had expressed its approval of the Paris proposal, retracted parts of it. Therefore, the mediators began trying to bring Israel back to the Paris proposal. We must wait for the reaction of the mediators with the Zionist entity. From our side, there was a clear statement by our brother Ismail Haniya, head of the political bureau, that we deal positively with ideas that we are keen to stop the aggression, provide relief to our people and the people of the siege, and the start of reconstruction process. In exchange for all of this, we will go to the prisoner exchange process, and therefore we have clearly defined our position. We are waiting for the enemy to have a positive position. The ball is in their court and the mediator's court. We have not backed down. As long as we are negotiating, we go on with it, and as long as the fight goes on, we fight.
Mr. Hamdan, How can Hamas utilize internal pressure on Netanyahu by emphasizing the urgency of releasing prisoners in Gaza, by highlighting the significance of this issue within Israeli society and among political stakeholders? This heightened pressure may compel him to seek a ceasefire deal that aligns with Hamas's terms in order to de-escalate tensions and address the issue of prisoners effectively.
There is no doubt that in the negotiation process, you make every effort to put pressure on the enemy. One of the tools of pressure, which you also mentioned, is to the prisoner swap, what these prisoners are suffering from, and the killing that occurred to some families as a result of the Israeli Air Force's bombing of some sites. Also, some of the prisoners were killed directly by the occupation army, as happening with three soldiers who were captured by the resistance, and then the group that captured them was mortared. When they escaped, the army killed them despite identifying them. This puts great pressure on Netanyahu. But the resistance also has other tools to put pressure on Netanyahu. One of them is the resistance's unrelenting firing of rockets at some cities and regions occupied in 1948. The continuation of the resistance action on the battlefield against the occupation is putting pressure on Israel, because every day there are more deaths among the occupation soldiers and more losses among the files and ranks of the army. Just for the army, the destruction of 1,000 military vehicles out of about 4,000 military vehicles in the ground forces is very heavy. This is all a lot of pressure on Netanyahu. An important addition that should be noted is the action of the resistance in southern Lebanon, or what the Ansarullah resistance is doing in Yemen, or the resistance in Iraq. This created pressure on the Zionist entity and also on the United States, which does not want the confrontation to expand in the region because it still believes that it can rearrange the region. The expansion of the confrontation will cause the Americans to lose control in the region, and the region will go on paths that will not necessarily be in the interest of the Americans, but rather will be in the interest of the people of the region. And this is what the Americans fear. These are all pressure cards on Netanyahu, and I believe this is the secret of the American insistence on reaching a solution that leads to a ceasefire.
Now, something about a ceasefire. Right now, the situation in Rafah. Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, even if a ceasefire agreement is reached. How can Hamas, restrain Netanyahu's recklessness in his military options in Gaza?
When Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, he is seeking two purposes. The first goal is to create pressure on the resistance to give up some of its demands in the negotiations. The second one is to try to put pressure on the mediators, otherwise things will deteriorate further. We said to the mediators that any move Netanyahu makes to attack Rafah will be faced by the resistance, but it will also make Netanyahu involved in a genocide massacre. And everyone knows that the International Court of Justice issued a preliminary ruling and set conditions for it. If Netanyahu is involved in a military operation towards Rafah, this will confirm that what he is doing is genocide, and this means that he is committing a crime against humanity, and this will have repercussions not only for him, but also on the American administration, which I mentioned a little while ago that it is an accomplice in this crime. That's why we're applying confrontational pressure. I think that Netanyahu is hesitant about the Grand Operation, but if he decides to do so, things will not be easy for his army.
Now, the world sympathizes greatly with the Palestinian people, but Israelis are attempting to influence global attention. For example, by Israeli president presentation of a book titled The End of the Jews to convince the world that Hamas seeks to annihilate the Jewish population. Now, how do you respond to such displays, especially in a significant security conference like the Munich conference?
I must clarify an issue by which the Israelis and the United States are trying to put pressure on us. We do not fight the Israelis because they are Jews. We are fighting them because they are occupiers of our land. Meaning if they leave our land, we will not pursue them and we will not fight them. Our battle has a political dimension that has nothing to do with the fact that they are Jews and believe in Judaism and has nothing to do with the fact that they came to Palestine or are present in other places. The real problem is that they occupied our land. The Jewish problem as a religious one is not related to our country. Rather, the Jewish problem began in Europe. They were expelled from Britain in the 16th century, and for 200 years, Jews were banned from entering. In France, they were prevented from exercising their religious rights from 1400 AD until 1808. In Spain, they were expelled and prevented from exercising their religious rights until 1982. In Germany, we know what happened. Every time the Jews fled this persecution, they came to our Muslim country. And you know that there are Jews in all Muslim countries who live in safety. The problem rose when they decided to become an occupying force, usurp our rights, and kill our people, which prompted us to resist them. Therefore, when the Zionist chief of staff talks about the end of the Jews, he is lying and trying to make excuses for a story that we did not create and was created by the Nazis. I think the answer to it is very simple. The Zionist media published pictures of him signing the missiles that were fired to kill our people, women and children. Therefore, I hope that he changes the title of his book to say, "The End of the Occupation." Yes, the occupation will end, and we as Muslims will certainly be able to end it. This is our religion to embrace all people of other religions. As Palestinians, we have Muslims and Christians. No one has ever talked about a crisis between Muslims and Christians in Palestine. Rather, we lived as one nation. Therefore, yes, the occupation will end, but not on the basis that the head of the Zionist entity or the Zionist propaganda speaks about. They want to make us appear as brutal people.
Thank you. That was a very thorough explanation of the conflict between Palestinians and the Israeli regime. Now, let's talk about what's going to happen after the genocidal war in Gaza. How do you envision the end of this onslaught and now entering its fifth month without a clear ceasefire on the horizon?
لا شك أن الاحتلال أعلن عن أهداف للعملية العسكرية التي يقوم بها.
There is no doubt that the occupation announced the goals of its military operation. They announced that they want to destroy the resistance of Hamas. They want to destroy Hamas, meaning the resistance. They announced that they wanted to free the prisoners from the hands of the resistance. They announced that they wanted to form an administration for the Gaza Strip, an administration linked to the regime. After about 5 months, what happened? They failed to eliminate the resistance. The resistance on the battlefield is still fighting. Every day there are losses among the occupation army, dead and wounded. They are still held captive by the resistance. The enemy was unable to free anyone alive except for what took place according to the exchange we agreed upon. They failed in trying to create a situation in which an administration in Gaza works with the occupation. They once spoke about clans and families, and the families issued a statement saying that they were biased towards the resistance. They tried to talk about a civil administration to be imposed on the Palestinian people. The Palestinians announced that they would deal with it as agents of the regime. Therefore, they failed in all of their goals. They had only one thing left, and that was the attack on Rafah. Its results will also be a failure. The enemy will realize at some point that it is unable to succeed. The Americans realize this issue and therefore are trying to persuade the Israelis to accept a ceasefire. The regional countries that accepted the Israeli aggression began to realize that the resistance's victory would not serve the interest of the Zionists. Therefore, I believe that the chances of reaching a ceasefire agreement, even if they do not seem high so far, are now present, and we will do our best to achieve it as quickly as possible, God willing.
And Mr. Hamdan, you already mentioned the support for the Palestinian resistance by the Iraqi resistance, the resistance in Yemen and Lebanon. Now, I want to ask you, how does Hamas evaluate this support for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip? Have they, you know, slowed down the pace of the onslaught in Gaza or exerted significant pressure on Israel and Americans that support them or are complicit in their crimes to impose certain options on Netanyahu?
I think there were two impacts. There is a direct impact and there is a strategic impact. The direct impact of the Resistance Act in Lebanon forced the occupation regime to keep parts of the army in northern Palestine. This means that if this confrontation had not occurred, this entire army would have launched an aggression against Gaza, and therefore the Israeli army's ability to confront it in Gaza would have been exhausted. Also, the resistance in Lebanon succeeded in inflicting real losses and casualties on the occupation army, and the occupation army began to feel that it might fall into additional trouble if this aggression continued. The resistance in Yemen succeeded in sending a clear message. A siege on the Palestinian people means a siege on the Zionist entity. The American administration did not succeed in dealing with the matter despite its aggression against Yemen. It has been proven that this aggression did not lead to any cessation of the resistance in Yemen, represented by our brothers in Ansar Allah. In Iraq, the American administration thought that the Iraqi people, after everything they had gone through and suffered from the American occupation and the injustice they suffered, might not care about issues like the Palestinian issue. The Americans were surprised that the Iraqi people began their resistance to confirm that they were with Palestine, and thus the Americans seemed to realize that they were losing and that their losses would be reflected in Israel. Strategically, I believe that the resistance action in Lebanon, Yemen, and Iraq achieved two goals. The first is that it sent a message that the resistance in the region is cohesive and works together in its own way and not according to what others want. Its method is effective. The second issue is that this axis has a firm, principled position and is using its capabilities in an intelligent and wise manner and is capable of achieving results. This means that the future of the region will not be according to what the United States of America or the Zionist entity wants. Rather, we are approaching a stage that the future of the region will be according to what the people of the region want. Therefore, I believe that what was achieved strategically and momentarily was important.
Okay, and the next thing I want to ask you, Mr. Hamdan, is about reports that suggest that Hamas, a political bureau chief, Ismail Haniyeh, and leader of Hamas in the Gaza Strip have lost contact. What is the situation now between the two? Has contact been reestablished? Or the other thing that I want to know, is there a disagreement between the two when it comes to a ceasefire?
Let me answer the second question, which is the consensus on a ceasefire. There is agreement on all the basic issues, whether between Brother Ismail Haniyeh, Brother Yahya Sinwar, or even within the political bureau of the movement. Most of the talk about internal division is rumors spread by the Zionist occupation forces, the psychological warfare organization in the occupation army, whose goal is to weaken the Palestinian front so as to make it appear as if there is a division within the resistance to affect our people or to make us comment and say that unity exists or that there is a certain thing going on which may lead to providing information to the Zionist entity that will help it reach the leadership of the resistance in Gaza. We say that the leadership decisions are made through the contribution of all members without exception. Its decision enjoyed the support of all leaders of the movements in their various positions. Rather, I go further and say that we do not take these decisions, especially regarding the ceasefire, except after consulting with our brothers in the Islamic Jihad movement and in the other resistance factions, because they are also partners in sacrifice. They are our blood partners. We cannot take a decision without consulting them all.
Thank you so much, Dr. Osama Hamdan, member of the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement. Goodbye.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله. Respected listeners from all over the world, welcome to IRB English Radio. Thank you so much for joining us on Let's Recite the Quranic Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm really happy to have brothers Ali Nasir, Hussein Ruhullah, Fawad Haider, and Hassan Nasrullah with me here today in the studio. I really welcome them all. Assalamu alaikum, everyone.
Wa alaikum assalam.
And Fawad, how are you?
Fine, sir.
Hassan, how are
Fine,
you?
Fine, sir.
Alhamdulillah. And Ali Nasir?
Alhamdulillah,
Hussein?
Sir.
Alhamdulillah. Inshallah, we will practice Ayah 42 from Surah
Al-A'raf
on page 155. So, dear listeners of IRB English Radio, grab your Qurans, turn to page 155, Surah Al-A'raf, Ayah 42. Let's listen to the recitation of this ayah.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. والذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات لا نكلف نفسا إلا وسعها أولئك أصحاب الجنة هم فيها خالدون.
Very nice recitation. I really enjoyed it. If you've enjoyed it, give me a big yes.
Yes.
All right. So I'll read it once, then one of you will recite it. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Walladhina amanu wa'amilus salihati la nukallifu nafsan illa wus'aha ulaika ashabul jannah hum fiha khalidun. Who wants to read?
Me.
Mimi.
Fawad.
Who is Mimi?
All of us.
Hussein, read it, please.
Okay, sir.
Because in the previous session, okay, he lost the election, okay? He was a candidate, but he lost the election. So let's relieve his heart, okay? And give him the chance to recite it. So
that's
Hussein.
Bullying. That's.
All right. Okay, Hussein. Sir.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
Wow, what an energy.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. والذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات لا نكلف نفسا إلا وسعها أولئك أصحاب الجنة.
ما شاء الله.
فيها خالدون.
أحسنتم. Thank you so much. You really gave us a fresh moment.
Excellent. Excellent.
Excellent. Impressive. ما شاء الله. والذين آمنوا. tell me some of the letters that you really have to pay attention to in case you have any problems with the pronunciations in Arabic letters.
Wow.
Wow.
Thal.
Thal. What else?
Hamza.
Hamza.
Ayn.
Ayn.
Saad.
Ha.
Ha. Ha.
Yes. And khaz.
And ha.
What?
Ha.
Ha. Ha. Ha, ha.
Oh, yeah, yeah, ha.
We have ha, we have
ha. Ha. The light one, soft.
Ha is not that much hard because it's also in English.
You may miss some
languages. No, but because it might be
confusing,
okay?
But yeah.
Ha and
yeah, you might.
Confused.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you might be confused. Look, you have ha. Ashabul Jannah. Ashabul. Then you have. هُمْ فِيهَا خَالِدُونَ So, ha is as if you use your belly button to breathe out.
Yes.
That's it. And use your throat. You don't push it, okay? No. It's not
normally. Easily.
All right. That's it, the first point, pronunciations of the letters. And second one, وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا Make sure you pronounce the mat letters correctly. Hassan, there are three mat letters. A, E, and?
Ooh.
Ooh, not ooh. Ooh. Ooh, yes. All right. Each of them is extended for two counts.
Two counts.
So make sure you do them. وَالَّذِينَ, not ذِينَ. وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا Not آمَنُوا آمَنُوا وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا Alright, Hassan?
Yes.
Everybody read it. وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا
وَالَّذِينَ آمَنُوا
وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ
وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ
Alright, alright, wait. Don't say عَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ عَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ مِ E sound. We don't have an A sound in recitation, okay? In some narrations, sometimes they read it, okay? Alright?
A different case.
Yeah. In different narrations, we have it, but... Basically, normally, don't do that. وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ Read.
وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ
Alright. لَا نُكَلِّفُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا وُسْعَهَا
لَا نُكَلِّفُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا وُسْعَهَا
Alright. Ulaika, make sure the wow in the word ulaika, huh? Is it pronounced?
Yes.
Ulaika,
no,
is that correct? Which one is correct? Listen, I read it two guys. Ulaika, I pronounced the wow. Ulaika, which one is correct?
The second one.
So that wow has a sukun on the sukun sign on the top. That indicates you have to ignore this well. It's written, but you don't have to pronounce it. So we ignore it. Otherwise, we had to extend the sound because it becomes waw mad, yes?
Yes.
But waw mad doesn't have any sukun sign. This waw has a sukun sign. It says ignore it. Skip it. Ulaika ashabul jannah.
أُولَئِكَ أَصْحَابُ الْجَنَّةِ
أَصْحَابُ الْجَنَّةِ No, أَصْ أَصْ heavy sound أَصْ Make sure it has a rough sound أَصْ أَصْ أَصْحَابُ Not أَصْحَا أَصْ No أَصْحَابُ الْجَنَّةِ Then switch to light sound أَصْحَا أَصْحَا أَصْحَا
Yes.
As-h. This one. As-h. A-a-a. This way.
Yes.
Ashabul Jannah. Read.
أصحاب الجنة.
Good, good. هم فيها خالدون.
هم فيها خالدون.
ما شاء الله.
قرآني في قلبي دوما يغمرني من فيض ضياء آيات المولى.
IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Xavier International Schools presents
والكون الواسع في صدري أحضله أرضا وسماء.
Let's recite the Quran.
ربي قد نلت منايا وبختم كتابك أرقى وبختم كتابك
أرقى. Allah Almighty says, as for those who have faith and do righteous deeds, we task no soul except according to its capacity. They shall be the inhabitants of paradise, hum fiha khalidun, and they shall remain in it forever. Look, a lot of people say that, well, waking up early in the morning to do the morning prayer, it's really difficult.
Really?
I have to be sleeping at that time.
No.
Oh, wait. It's so dark everywhere. I should get up and go wash your face. And you can no longer sleep because you just become fresh.
No, that's an excuse.
Just wash your face.
When I pray, I lighten up my surrounding.
You're an exceptional case.
So people say, okay, some people say that it's difficult, so I don't have to suffer difficulty, okay? I don't have to suffer hard times, so I don't want to do the prayers. But Allah Almighty says, no, it's not a difficult thing. All right? It's not something that you can't do. It's something that you can do.
But you won't
do. It is difficult. You have to suffer hard times, okay? But you can do it.
Yes.
This is in your ability. You have the capacity. Because of that, Allah Almighty has commanded us.
But some people don't.
Something. Yeah?
But some people don't.
Well, yeah, some people even don't believe in God. Okay? Now, لَا نُكَلِّفُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا وُسْعَهَا. Of course, for example, a lady, a girl, okay, who has just entered 9 years old, okay, entered her age of puberty, maybe. So if it's really, it might be really hard for her to fast, okay? She's not able to do that. So a lot of people have this doubt that, oh, look at Islam religion. They force a girl age of 9 to fast. Well, she can't. Without breakfast, if she goes to school, she will pass away. Huh? How can she fast for like 12 hours, 15 hours, 20 hours? It's impossible. Islam is not a good religion. Allah says, no. لَا نُكَلِّفُ اللَّهُ نَفْسًا إِلَّا وُسْعَهَا. If that young lady cannot fast, okay, it's okay for her. She can do it after, whenever she could. Yes?
But sir, we know, for example, I myself know many people who fast from 6 years old whole month of Ramzan.
Thawabi one, yes?
Ramzan, yes.
Recommended one.
They are maybe not Bali, but they do that.
Yeah, yeah. Of course.
So that's not so hard.
Yeah, it's that's not possible. So. Yeah, Allah says that, yeah?
Yes.
It's in your capacity. If it is wajib when you enter the age of puberty, of course it is wajib upon you, okay? But before that, you're not forced to do it when you're not mature enough, okay?
Just a question.
Yes.
Yeah.
For example, someone is sick. He can fast. He can fast.
Sick or Muslim?
He's a Muslim, but he's sick.
He's ill, okay.
Yeah, he's ill. So, why does God say that he cannot fast if he's sick?
Oh, in that case, it's harmful for him. So, in that case, it becomes, if he really cannot, and if he does, that's haram for him to do it. In that case, the rule changes. All right? So, Islam is... the religion of wisdom.
The only constant thing is change.
Alright. So, that's it. Refer to the Tafasir books, inshallah, to learn more. It's time to recite this ayah, the last part of our class. I'll do it. You make sure to repeat after me. Ready, everyone?
Yes.
Yes.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
والذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات لا نكلف نفسا إلا وسعها.
والذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات لا نكلف نفسا إلا وسعها.
لا نكلف نفسا إلا وسعها أولئك أصحاب الجنة.
لا نكلف نفسا إلا وسعها أولئك أصحاب الجنة
هم فيها خالدون.
هم فيها خالدون.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
صدق الله العلي العظيم.
أحسنتم. Allah bless you, inshallah. That's it from us for today, dear brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Stay with us. Thank you so much for being with us today. We look forward to seeing you in the next coming sessions, inshallah. Thank you so much, Fawad Hassan Hussein Adi Nasser, for being with us in this session. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور. آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: the death toll from the U.S. Israeli genocide in Gaza nears 30,880, more than 5 months into the war in the Palestinian territory. The U.S. president comes under fire for his State of the Union address voicing support for aid to Gaza while he keeps supporting the genocide there. And the UN rights chief says expansion of Israeli settlements on occupied Palestinian land constitutes a war crime. Our top story for this half hour, more than 5 months into Israel's genocidal war on Gaza, the regime's indiscriminate attacks keep claiming more civilian lives. At least 78 Palestinians have been killed in airstrikes since Thursday noon. That's according to the health ministry in Gaza. It said the regime conducted 8 massacres against people across the besieged territory. The latest attacks hit different locations from northern Gaza to its central and southern parts, a refugee camp in Jabalia. The cities of Deir al-Bala and Rafah, as well as Gaza City, were all targeted. 8 people were killed in the southern city of Khan Yunis. The total death toll is now nearing 30,880. Also, over 72,400 have been injured in the war taking place with U.S. complicity. Now let's take a listen to comments by some Palestinian parents and medics explaining how malnutrition is affecting children in Gaza.
There is no proper food for the mothers, especially in the recent period, as we noticed that since December until today, there are no babies with normal weights. Most of them are from 2 kilograms to 2.5. We stopped seeing babies weighing 3 kilograms as in the recent period. The last 4 months since October until today, there is no nutrition for mothers. There is no meat, milk, eggs, fruits or vegetables.
I'm a mom who lost her son due to malnutrition, due to circumstances we're going through in Gaza. You can see for yourself where we live, in a school inside a 3-meter tent right in front of toilets. What are you expecting from a sick child living in such conditions? How can he get better?
Yazan al-Kafarna, who passed away, was displaced from the north, and he originally had issues with his muscles, but his health was acceptable. He used to receive proper treatment and healthy food, but with the lack of food after the war began, he got worse.
March the 8th marks the International Women's Day, an occasion on women across the world celebrate and also used to push for their rights. But the situation is different in Gaza. Their women, along with children, make up most of the casualties caused by the Israeli war and face a worsening humanitarian situation. Let's take a listen to some of the comments by women in Gaza.
We face the horrors of bombings, endure harsh conditions in tents, and suffer from extreme weather. That leaves no room to celebrate.
Women worldwide eagerly await and celebrate this day, whereas Gazans live in tents and are deprived of rights and unable to celebrate it.
I'm a woman who lost an eye due to bombardment. We're constantly being relocated from one tent to another, moving from one region to the next.
We're displaced and we've experienced the loss of our homes and our children who were martyred. Our hope is to one day celebrate Women's Day in our hometown under ordinary circumstances.
The largest Muslim civil rights organization in the U.S. criticizes President Joe Biden over his stance on the genocide and the humanitarian situation in Gaza. The Council on American-Islamic Relations, known as CARE, issued a statement on its X account after Biden made his State of the Union speech. It called on Biden to stop playing both firefighter and arsonist during the Gaza genocide. The organization said Biden should stop airdropping food on Gaza while simultaneously sending weapons to Israel. CARE urged the U.S. president to secure a real ceasefire in Gaza. On Thursday, Biden spoke about humanitarian assistance in Gaza during his final State of the Union speech as president. He told Congress that Israel should not use the aid as a bargaining chip.
Israel must allow more aid into Gaza to ensure humanitarian workers aren't caught in the crossfire. And they're announcing they're going to have a crossing in northern Gaza. The leadership of Israel, I say this, humanitarian assistance cannot be a secondary consideration or a bargaining chip. Protecting and saving innocent lives has to be a priority.
As Biden was speaking, some of the audience held placards calling for a ceasefire in Gaza and a stop to weapons delivery to Israel. Outside, there were similar calls as well. Protesters gathered waving Palestinian flags and expressing anger at Biden for supporting the Gaza genocide. His administration has been lending all support to Israel from giving weapons and money to blocking UN Security Council resolutions on a ceasefire in Gaza. A new report by the Washington Post reveals that the U.S. has quietly made over 100 weapons sales to Israel since the Gaza war began. That is besides the hundreds of millions of dollars sales of weapons to Israel that Biden initiated without congressional approval. We were earlier joined by Palestinian scientist and author Mazen Rumsia, who gave us some insight into Joe Biden's State of the Union address. He said, contrary to the U.S. president's claim of intending to help Palestinians in Gaza, it's the U.S. that is blocking aid to Gaza.
Biden is a long life Zionist, not because of conviction or because of what he believes. It's because, like most of the politicians in the Western world, in so-called, the United States of America, built on stolen native lands, that country is run by basically some people who are now run by the Zionist lobby. This is a person who poured fuel on the fire and then claims that Israel should put down parts of the fire. He's the one who's fueling this fire. The U.S. is the one who's fueling this fire. My comment on Biden that he is it's finished, basically. He's going to lose the election. Trump is, of course, worse than him. Biden said the State of the Union is strong. I say the State of the Union in the United States is weak, and it will be finished under Trump. There are over 2,000 trucks piled up on Rafah ready to enter Gaza to provide aid for the people of Gaza, and they are being prevented. With one phone call, the U.S. president could make Israel Netanyahu allow entry of aid into Gaza. But the U.S. supports the blockage of aid into Gaza. There's a genocide going on, a genocide by blockade, a genocide by siege, a genocide by bombing, a genocide by denying of medical aid. As I said, it's hypocritical, it's cynical, it is disgusting. For us Palestinians here in the occupied territories, when I hear Joe Biden speak,
moving on, UN Human Rights Chief warns that expansion of Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories amounts to a war crime under international law. Volker Turk said Israeli settlements have expanded by a record amount. He said that means the regime wants to transfer its own population into the occupied land. The UN official added that the growth of settlements risks eliminating any practical possibility of a Palestinian state. He made the comments in a report to the UN Human Rights Council. Turk said Palestinians are being forced from their homes by Israeli settlers and state violence. He added violence and settlement-related violations have reached shocking new levels. All Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories are illegal under international law. Protesters have poured onto the streets of the northern Yemeni city of Sa'ada in yet another rally in support of Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. While the Yemeni protesters chanted slogans against Israel and its main supporter, the U.S., they've been holding rallies on Friday since the Gaza war broke out in early October. The Yemenis voiced support for their army's operations against Israeli-linked ships in the Red Sea. They held placards reading, "The next will be greater." That's the day after the leader of the Ansarullah resistance movement promised stronger operations. The demonstrators also voiced support for their army's attacks on American and British ships in retaliation for the two countries' airstrikes on Yemen. The U.S. and the U.K. claim the airstrikes aim to protect international shipping. Latest polls are showing that radical right parties are poised to secure the top position in several European countries at the next EU elections in June. Many have lost faith in the European Union and its ability to work for the common good of all Europeans. Our correspondent Max Shively reports from Rome.
According to the latest European Council on Foreign Relations think tank's forecast for the 2024 European Parliament elections, there will be a major shift to the right in many member states in the June vote. The forecast also indicates that populist radical right parties are likely to gain votes and seats across the European Union, while centre-left and green parties will be losing votes and seats. Far-right formations are poised to secure the top position in nine countries, including Austria, France, Italy and Poland.
The risk that right and far-right formation will change the face of the EU at the next elections in June is dramatically high. Domestic and foreign policy choices will be definitely affected. This can be explained by looking at the policies in favor of the multinational and of the United States that have been adopted so far by the EU leadership, policies that go against the very interest of the Europeans.
Some analysts argue that an increasing number of EU citizens hold Brussels accountable for soaring food costs, economic stagnation, and deteriorating living standards across the old continent. The European Union has failed in many ways to deliver on its promises. Europeans' wealth has been gravely tarnished by more than two decades of tough fiscal measures and wild privatization and outsourcing policies, which have resulted in widespread company closures and massive layoffs.
L'asse tra Inghilterra.
The UK-US axis has been dictating the line, and practically all political parties across the EU, from left to right, have shifted ideologies and allegiances with the goal of remaining as close as possible to that line. The result is that this EU is anti-people entity. It wages lawfare against its own people, EU citizens' money is used to fund wars and the purchase of weapons, and not to support livelihoods.
EU officials have recently unveiled plans to boost defense production by promoting joint military purchases of European-produced arms among the member states. From February 2022 to June 2023, EU states spent more than 100 billion euros on defense acquisitions, with the US alone accounting for more than 60%. In 2022, more than 95 million people in the European Union, or 22% of the population, were at risk of poverty or social exclusion. Max Civili, Rome.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has long pursued a policy of deepening ties with neighboring and regional states. Russia is one of the countries that Iran has boosted its cooperation with in recent years. The two countries have close economic and political ties and are now eyeing the opportunities to further strengthen and broaden their ties as well.
Iran and Russia have significantly enhanced their cooperation in a wide range of fields. A key driving force behind the growth of bilateral relations between the two countries is forging a new geoeconomic reality in one of the world's most strategic regions. Both nations have been pursuing several objectives in this regard. They have been after establishing an independent monetary system, energy market, and parallel supply chains outside the control of Western regulatory frameworks to circumvent sanctions imposed in an attempt to isolate them. And their efforts have yielded significant success. In the field of trade, despite facing severe sanctions, Iran has managed to surpass the $2 billion threshold in exports to Russia. Iran's exports to Russia predominantly consist of fruits, polymer products, vehicles, non-metal minerals, and chemical products. Similarly, Russian exports to Iran, valued at the same amount, mainly comprise agricultural products. Iranian officials have hailed the economic cooperation between the two nations as closer than ever.
Analyzing the export trend, we see an acceptable growth in all sectors, with Iran's exports to Russia witnessing a notable increase in both volume and value. This progress not only contributes to the advancement of the two nations, but also lays the foundation for the development of other regional countries.
The total value of annual bilateral trade between the two countries reached $4.9 billion in 2023, according to Iran's official statistics. A Russian economic delegation was in Tehran in late February for the 17th round of their Joint Economic Commission. Both sides then pledged to boost trade tenfold over the coming years. Mahdi Abusyan, Tehran.
That's a wrap for now. Bye, everybody.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.